Hello and welcome. You're tuned in to the best in paranormal podcasting. This is Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. That fellow over there, Tim Dennis. Hello, Tim.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good. Hey, we're back tonight with Holzer's Ghosts live video stream. You'll be able to tune in and check it out on our social media pages at Darkness Radio, Dave Schrader, and check out the Darkness Radio YouTube page. As a matter of fact, go check that out right now. You can go hit the bell. You can follow us, subscribe. It's free. And then you never miss a minute in the extra bonus material that we make available for you on the show. You get to watch the live video stream tonight and interact with us during the show, 9 p.m. Central Time. That's 10 p.m. Eastern for those of you on the Pacific Coast. It is 7 p.m. for those of you in Mountain Time, 8 p.m. I think we've covered all the time zones that I know of offhand, Tim.
I think so.
GMT and BBC and KITE. I don't know all the rest of them.
Yeah, you know me.
Yeah. So 7 Pacific, 8 Mountain, 9 Central, 10 o'clock Eastern tonight live. For those of you that don't listen live, we will be back on podcast form tomorrow. You'll have that audio wrapped up. A lot of people upset that we haven't done those shows. They don't even realize, Tim, that's a gimme. We're only on two days a week, plus True Crime Tuesday.
Yep, we're contracted for three shows a week, and you're actually getting a Benny there. You're getting a bonus on that day.
So we're doing our best to keep it flowing, and I enjoy doing the live video streams. So we're going to keep popping them out. Unfortunately, our guest from a few weeks ago had emergency surgery the day of and could not be a part of our show. He was an integral part of the show, so we put that off. Last week, I had my second COVID show. Got Tim, and all my hair fell out.
Oh, what?
Well, I mean, not from the shot. My hair fell out years ago.
Oh, right.
I was just throwing that out there for people that might not have kept up with my current look. No, I'm fine. Everything's going well. I'm healthy, happy, and ready to roll. Excited, Tim, because this weekend, I'm back at Mansfield Reformatory, the Ohio State Reformatory in Mansfield, Ohio. Come on by. If you haven't got tickets, just show up. You can get them at the door. And it's a strange event in the fact that there's not technically event tickets. There's tickets for the tours and such. And by entering to see the tours and check out OSR, you get to come in and be a part of the event. So you can go to darknessevents.com. That's darknessevents.com. You'll find more information about the Mansfield Reformatory, Ohio State Reformatory event in just a couple of weeks. Tim and I and Shane and I, all four of us, Tim, we're going to be together out in Gettysburg for Phenomenology 2020. That's right. For one weekend and one weekend only, we're teleporting you back in time to 2020.
Yeah.
Well, not really.
No.
It was supposed to happen in 2020. It's happening in 2021, but let's just pretend that it's better days. So that's going to happen the first weekend in June, Gettysburg. Come on out, man. There are so many amazing guests. You've got guests from Ghost Nation, Kindred Spirits. Jeff Belanger is going to be there. Tim and I are going to be there. I believe Shane and Cindy, maybe. I can't remember if Cindy's there, but Shane's definitely there. There's a lot of cool stuff going on. So come on out. Check us out. Check out darknessevents.com for updates on all the locations that you can come visit with us this year. And there are quite a few. I'm doing an event, at least one event a month between now and February.
That's
can you
lot.
Believe that?
Yeah. Yeah.
I got to work. Yeah. Last year knocked me out, dude. I was panhandling. Yeah.
You were not panhandling.
No, I know. I should have been panhandling. That would have made things go. So you got 9 people under your roof. You got to take care of them, Tim.
I guess so, yeah.
I was dancing a jig for nickels on the corner. People just walk by and toss money in my hat.
Well, it's a living, yeah.
It's what you got to do. You got to do. I mean, I guess I could sit down and write a book about my ghostly adventures, but then I'd feel like I'd be impinging on our next guest. John Russell is our guest. A Knock in the Attic. True Ghost Stories and Other Spine-Chilling Paranormal Adventures came out in February this year. We have finally caught up with John. We're able to talk with him today. John has been a highly regarded professional psychic for almost 50 years, reading for thousands of clients in over 30 countries around the world. And as a paranormal investigator, he's physically experienced over 800 paranormal manifestations. A Knock in the Attic, True Ghost Stories and Other Spine-Chilling Paranormal Adventures is his story. not only about his psychic awakening and the abundance of mind-blowing otherworldly confrontations he's experienced, but also about the point at which he lost his faith and gave up on himself, his psychic gifts, and the beings on the other side. Thankfully, they didn't give up on him, and neither have we. Welcome to the program, John Russell. John, thanks for joining us today.
Hi, David. Hi, Tim. It's so great to be here. I really appreciate you guys having me. I'm looking forward to it and looking forward to putting on a good show for the listeners.
I have faith you will. Let's dive into this interesting story. I mean, been doing professional psychic readings for almost 50 years.
Yes.
Is there a time?
It will be 50 years.
That's great. Is there a time you can look back in your life when you don't remember having these kind of abilities or having this gift?
When I was 3 to 4 years old, and I do have accurate memories back to 2 years old, I asked my brother one time, I said, I'm going to describe something, and you tell me how old I was, and she said, you were two. So going back to around 3 or 4, I don't have any psychic memories up to that point or any specific things I can point to that really peg the needle, so to speak. But when I was 5 years old, I was awakened by an old black ghost. And I screamed bloody murder because I was 5 years old. I was a kid. We didn't have anyone black living with us. I don't think we even knew anyone black at the time. And my assumption was that an intruder had broken into our home. And he was staring at me. I was sound asleep at night. And I woke up suddenly wide awake for no reason at all. And I raised up on my elbows. I looked around the room. And I was like, well, what in the world is this all about? And my parents had left a nightlight on in the hall down the hallway for me. And through my open bedroom door, I could see him peeking around the doorway by the nightlight glow. And that's when I screamed bloody murder. And when I did, he walked around the doorway and walked into the hall, walked toward my bedroom. And he was absolutely physically as solid as you or I, fully dressed. I can tell you what he had on. I can tell you what he looked like. And I screamed bloody murder again. And when I did, my parents came running, and he began to vanish. He began to get translucent, then transparent, and beginning at the feet going up, and then he vanished completely. And I told my parents there was somebody in the house, even though I'd just seen him vanish. And I was so convincing that my father, I remember my mother held me and tried to calm me down. My father went through the house, checked all the closets under the beds, checked the doors and windows. We were all locked up tight. Nobody had broken in. Nothing had happened. So they tried to convince me it was a child's nightmare, and I knew better. I realized I had just seen my first ghost. And
let me ask you really quickly here, John. Now, when you look back at this moment with the perception and understanding of an adult, do you believe that this was an African-American man, or was it what we would refer to now as shadow people, that dark presence that takes, you know, a very dark form?
Right. No, it definitely wasn't a shadow person. It was an African-American male, and I could see him clearly. I could describe his features. He had close-cropped white hair. He had a white mustache. I can tell you the clothes he had on. He wore a red flannel shirt, had on khaki pants, black dress shoes, and a black belt. So definitely not a shadow person. And after that experience, that awakened me then, or opened the portal, I should say, to the paranormal manifestations that you made mention of, and I've kept track of them. They're well over 1,000 now. I periodically have to update my website and update things, and they're well over 1,000. And the neat thing about these are literal physical manifestations that occur on the physical realm. They're witnessed by other people a lot of times. A lot of times we photograph them, we audio record them, video record them. So these are real occurrences, not anything I dream or envision or imagine or hallucinate or meditate or whatever. These are actual physical occurrences that happen in my life, and they range from the mundane to the literally life-saving. And so his job apparently was just to come and open that portal to these experiences so I could have them, learn from them, and then introduce them to other people, and when people are with me, they can experience them as well, and that awakens them to the reality that there is this other realm, there is the other side, and we can interact with it in a physical manner. So that was when the...
Let me bring you back for one more second, though, again. I mean, you talk about this instant. John, when you see this man and he's there, is he looking at you, or do you get a feel that this is a replay of a spirit, something you're seeing?
He's looking me in the eyes. He's interacting with me. He's looking me in the eyes. He's engaging me.
You were terrified because, again, you knew it was somebody you didn't recognize. It was a stranger danger in your home.
Right.
So before people start hammering out emails of, oh, is this guy racist? He saw a black guy. No, he knew that this wasn't somebody he knew. That's why he reacted that way. And it's weird that
there was nothing racist about it. I have a lot of black friends and so on and so forth.
But
so nothing racist at all about it. He just happened to appear as a black man.
and was not somebody you were familiar with in your home.
There you go.
Now, you see him. When you start to react, does he seem distressed? Like, oh, crap, I didn't mean to scare you, John. Or do you feel that he was there to kind of put a little bit of the fear of God in you?
Well, I don't think he was there to put the fear of God in me. I think he was there to awaken me and to open this portal to these experiences. And shortly thereafter, my psychic gift awakened as well, and I became aware of that. And I think it was just a matter-of-fact thing. It's like, this is probably going to scare the kid to death, but it's what's got to be done. And the look on his face was not malevolent whatsoever. It was just kind of a benign, bemused look, like, oh, look at this poor kid. You know, sorry to do this, kid, but hey, you're going to thank me later. And that was the experience. And like I say, you know, I attribute the fright to my young age and to assuming an intruder was in the home.
And did he seem surprised?
Did he seem surprised? Not at all.
Yeah, you could see him?
No, not at all. No, he was there for me to see him. Absolutely. He was there for me to see him. That was his mission. And like I say, terrified me at the time, and I attribute that to my age. And since then, I can honestly say I have never been scared since in all of these well over 1,000 physical manifestations and paranormal psychic experiences.
Well,
never
as
been
a,
frightened since.
As a sensitive, as somebody who has this ability to see, experience this, have you ever called that spirit forward again so that you could know who it was and what specifically came to you?
Yeah, great question. I have tried to, and he has not reappeared. It's kind of like he's out there in the periphery somewhere. I kind of know, like, maybe he's kind of keeping tabs or whatever. But as far as I know, he has never made direct contact of any kind again. And so I've just, you know, I dedicate one of my books in the foreword to him and say, thank you for opening up the portal to the gifts. And I'm sure at some point we'll meet again, either on this side or the other side. But I've tried to make that contact and have not been successful.
All right. What do you make of that then? Do you think that this, because it was something that happened to awaken these gifts, do you believe that this was an angel, or do you believe that it was a disincarnate human spirit?
I'm not sure who or what the gentleman was. There's a possibility that he may have been a disincarnate a human entity on the other side. But my feeling is he may have been closer to an angel or some other type of entity that really had the knowledge and the ability to open this portal, to somehow convey this to me and to bring this to me in such a way that it manifested, opened up, and things began to work in my life. And I don't know that an ordinary person that, you know, was dead on the other side from a life previous would have had that knowledge or had that ability. Would I say he was angelic? Possibly. That could be an explanation. But then again, I think possibly he may have been just someone of a very higher order and a very higher intelligence and power that was able to come through and do this and to manifest this. And it was a dynamic experience in retrospect. Scared the life out of me at the time, but in retrospect, it was a dynamic experience to have.
All right. Well, let me ask you this then. And bear with me, this may sound a little strange asking. The spirits make themselves known. We know that locations are haunted and something is going on. Why do you think that veil is not just lifted in the sense that ghosts can communicate with everyone? If we're all given these gifts, as it says in the Bible, right? I mean, Christ says that the things that he does, so can we, if we just have faith and belief.
Right.
And he was able to raise the dead and heal people and necromance. So that was a skill and a gift that he had. Why do you think that if these if existence continues beyond the physical form, why aren't we more aware of that? Why don't all of us get a chance to just see this and interact as though it's just another element of existence?
I'm glad you asked that, and I've got some answers for you. And they're concrete, and they work, and they make sense. For one thing, we do all have psychic abilities, but we have psychic abilities in the same way that we have musical ability. Now, somebody can sit down at the piano, a great maestro, a concert pianist, can sit down at the piano and play Chopin or Beethoven or whatever with amazing skill and with such emotion that it just raises the hairs on our arms and just touches us and inspires us and maybe even brings us to tears. And somebody else, no matter how much they study and no matter how hard they try, they're never going to get much past chopsticks. Okay? So it's the same way with psychic gifts. We all have psychic gifts to a degree. And some of us can develop those gifts to a very, very, very high degree, and others are not able to. So that's one of the answers to the question there. The other thing is, I liken communication to the other side, and we talk about that veil and the veil thinning periodically and so on and so forth. I liken communication to the other side to, let me give you an example. When I was a kid, when I was a teenager, met this guy that had a ham radio, shortwave radio. And on a really good night with just the right conditions, which nobody ever knew what were, but on a really good night with just the right conditions, we could sit in Texas and talk to somebody in Australia and have a conversation just as clear as if they were sitting in the room with us. The very next night, he would have a hard time raising somebody across town, couldn't get anybody across the world. So I think in communication from the other side and our communication with the entities, the spirits, the people there, we encounter that. Sometimes the conditions are more favorable, sometimes they're not. What those are, we don't know. That's why in church we sing hymns and try and raise that consciousness, or in spiritualist churches they chant or sing or do whatever to raise the vibration, to raise that consciousness. People that practice different religions, different rituals, will do different things to try and get those forces into a favorable alignment, to raise the environment so that that communication becomes favorable and easier. And we've always done that all across all religions. So that shows the difficulty of trying to access that communication. And sometimes it's real easy, sometimes it's not. The other thing is, the other aspect is that there are some people on the other side that are just better communicators. I have had dear friends on the other side that I would love to have heard from more and just can't seem to get that. And then I had a dear friend that crossed over, and this guy communicated in evidential form with everybody, just constantly. Just an amazing proof that he was still alive, an amazing proof that it was him. And this went on for months and months and months this way. Why was he able to do it and others weren't? We don't know the answers to those questions, and that's what we're still trying to find out. That's what we endeavor to find out. But that's some of the reasons that we can't. And I think also you have to look at the fact that some people are raised, their particular religious upbringing may forbid them to seek out that type of communication. A lot of people are taught if that thing happens, it's demonic or it's satanic or it's evil or whatever, and they shouldn't pursue it. So that closes a door. That closes a window of communication, an opportunity of communication there. And so a lot of those things factor into it, and it's something that, for all of our years of study and for all of our years of trying and practice and everything else, we're still working on it. We're still trying to get those answers. I think we are getting better, but we have a long way to go still, and there's still a lot of unanswered questions there.
Well, I'm curious what your thoughts are on this, John. We, of course, have been friends with mediums and psychics on the show since our very start.
Sure.
And it's interesting. And Tim, I think you can back me on this. Each of you have amazing gifts and talents, and there are commonalities amongst those.
Right.
But then each medium has different perspectives on who can see, why they can see, what we're seeing, what this really means. Why do you think there's such a division? I mean, to me, that would seem like this is the easiest thing for us to explain because we're all on a level playing field. But yet, there's no angels. There's no devils. It's all ghosts. It's all devils. It's all angels.
Right.
It's interdimensional beings. It's
exactly.
imps. It's And everybody yep. seems to have this different...
this different philosophy, different theory, different
right.
reasons. And the reason for that is... Mm-hmm. The reason for that is that we grow up learning certain things, and those stay in our wheelhouse. And then as we begin to study and to develop spiritual gifts and to begin to try and focus on utilizing certain spiritual techniques, that whoever we learn that from and whatever their belief system is or whatever they think they may have experienced, they translate that to us or transmit that to us, and we accept that into our wheelhouse as part of all that. So we parrot what we've learned. And what I've tried to do my entire life is to stay away from all of that. As a paranormal investigator as well as a psychic, I've said, okay, let's find out what works here and what doesn't. Let's see if we can find out what the truth is as much as possible. And if that destroys our particular belief system, fine, so be it. And so what I've tried to do along the way is discard things that are questionable or things that don't work or things that are just parroting somebody else's teachings. And I've tried to go directly to the source, directly to the other side, and say, okay, guys, teach me, show me, let me have these experiences. And so, you know, what you're talking about there, somebody that's raised in a voodoo religion is going to reference everything from the point of voodoo. Somebody that's raised in a Christian religion is going to reference everything from the point of the Christian religion, the Bible, and so on and so forth. So we have all of those schisms and divisions there. For that reason, and that's why I like to encourage everybody to get away from those things and to get away from traditions and dogma and ritual and those types of teachings, and let's get down to, hey, let's let the other side come tell us who and what it is and what these things are, and let's not jump to conclusions that everything we see is a demon or everything we see is an angel or whatever. We have to get past that if we're going to continue to make some real progress and do some good in our lives. Let me interject here one thing that's interesting. Okay. You talk about, well, I can give you one real good example. I was shooting a TV pilot for the History Channel, which unfortunately didn't air. And in the filming process, there was a lady there, one of the places, historic sites we were at. And she came over to me and she said, listen, when there's a break in the shooting, I've got to talk to you. I've got to ask you this question. I said, sure, fine. So we got a break in the shooting. She says, come here, come here. And we got off into away from everybody into another part of the house there. And she said, a ghost tried to kill me. I said, oh, baloney, no ghost tried to kill you. And she said, yes. She said, I was in my kitchen, and from the cupboard across the kitchen, the door flew open. This dish flew out, and it flew across the room, hit the wall, and shattered real close to me. This ghost tried to kill me. I said, no, the ghost did not try to kill you. If the ghost tried to kill you, you'd be dead. I said, what I perceive psychically is that the other side has some messages for you and some guidance for you, and they're trying to get through to you, and they've been trying to get through to you for a real long time. And so just like if a little kid is with his mom, he's being dragged around shopping, and she's at the dress rack looking through the dresses, and he's mom, 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 and she's ignoring him. He looks over and he sees a chair sitting there, and he goes, okay, and he pushes the chair over. Bam, his mother turns around. What'd you do? Well, now he's got her attention. Same thing here. They've been trying to communicate with you and get your attention for a long time. You've been ignoring them for whatever reason. And so finally, they're like, ignore this. And you can't. And it's not a threat. It's not a warning. It's not a danger. It's just like, hey, we're here. Pay attention. We're trying to communicate with you. But in her context, in her frame of reference that she had been taught, you know, the ghost tried to harm me or tried to kill me. And that wasn't the case at all. So a lot of it has to do with our personal prejudices, our belief systems, the way we were raised, what we were taught. You know, and one thing I do in my readings for my clients, my opinion is out of it. The guys give me the information from the other side. I give it straight to them unfiltered, and there you go. I don't give you my opinion. I don't give you my bias. I don't give you my upbringing, my dogma, nothing. It's like straight from the other side. And I think that's what we all have to learn to do, and I think that's why there are so many varying differences between psychics and mediums in what they present and what their thought processes are and where they think it comes from or what it is the way they were raised. You know, somebody raised in a spiritualist church is going to have a different opinion of the way things are than someone raised in a Christian church, and on. So I think that's where a lot of that comes from.
What do you think is going on? And I've been there, Tim has been there for this as well. When we've been at a haunted location, right, and a medium will step up and is in direct communication with something, someone.
Right.
Right. And then the medium standing off to my right goes, I don't know who he's talking to because the ghost is standing over here by me looking just as quizzical as we are. Mm-hmm. So I mean, is this just sour grapes of one medium and another medium? Or is this, why do people pick up on this? Yeah. You know, if we both have this ability, why am I not seeing the ghost you're talking to?
Okay, that may be sour grapes among mediums, because let me tell you, unfortunately, one thing I have learned in doing this professionally since the age of 18, like I said, it'll be 50 years next year, and one thing I have learned in meeting a lot of people and doing this professionally for thousands and thousands of clients in over 40 countries now worldwide, is that there are huge egos in religion and in spirituality. And people want to have things their way. They want you to think they're the preeminent authority, or they've got the handle on it, or they've got the hot button, or they've got the superior gift. And a lot of it is envy. A lot of it is ego. A lot of it is, hey, the spotlight's not on me. Bring the spotlight back over here. Unfortunately, that's some of it. And I've learned that over the years. And then I think, too, that... you know, if you put, I'll give you a good example. I think you ask, you know, is somebody on the same frequency or different frequency? I think you can be on different frequencies. I think someone may be seeing or experiencing something that someone else isn't, even though they are both psychic. And I used to go, when I was young, I would go to psychic fairs. And at this one particular fair that I went to, it was in a large Holiday Inn. I had a big, huge room in there, big, gigantic conference room. And then they also had a restaurant and a bar. And I'm like, man, I'm home here, boy. You know, I can do my readings and everything, all my spiritual work for the day, go to the restaurant, grab something to eat, go to the bar, get something to drink, go up to my room and sleep and get ready for the next day. So one of my friends I had met there, a fellow psychic, we had met up in the bar after dinner. And we were sitting there having drinks and talking shop. And the bartender came over and he goes, what do you guys do? And we said, oh, we're psychics. We're here for the psychic fair. And he's like, oh, well, that's interesting. And we're like, you don't believe. And he's like, no, not really. I really don't. I'm not trying to insult you or anything. We're like, oh, no insult taken. And I said, I tell you what. I said, we're going to sit here free of charge. And me and my buddy are going to drink. And while you've got time, you come listen to us. And we're going to read for you. We're going to blow your hair back. And we're going to make you a believer. He's like, okay, that's fair enough. So we did, and we read in concert together for this guy. And my friend, who is psychic, would pick up on little nuances and things that I did not. And maybe perhaps I did and just didn't think they were important. And I would pick up on things, vice versa, that he did not. And so the two of us together then kind of gave this guy a more complete reading, if you will. And we did turn him into a believer at the end of the thing. We read for him, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes probably. And we reached the end of it, and we said, well, and he said, man, he said, I would have to say you guys are 98% accurate, and the only reason I don't give you 100 is because I got to go make a phone call and check out something you said. And he went and made the phone call, came back, and he said, okay, 100% accurate. So that was a great experience, a fun experience. But again, that may explain some of it. You know, it's like this guy, he was getting a few things I didn't. I was getting a few things he didn't. And so that may account for some of that. And plus, too, it's like we tend to view things in a certain frames as more important than the other. Maybe my guides or the spirits or the guys around me say, hey, make sure you get this in. And maybe some other psychic standing over here and their spirits are telling them, well, make sure this goes in, you know. So that may be part of it, but I think a lot of it can go back to ego and, you know, hey, the spotlight's not on me. And like I say, maybe some of it is that I'm getting a different frequency than the guy next to me is getting. It could be that, yes.
Tim, do you think there's any chance that they were drunk and only thought they were doing a really good reading and there wasn't even somebody there that they were talking to? It was a ghost?
You never know.
I only bring that up, John, because Tim and I
love you guys. You're great.
Tim and I have been at the bar before thinking we're doing really good with a woman, mm-hmm. only to realize that all the cool lines we're throwing sound a lot like,
John, there you go.
John, I'll tell you.
Smiling doesn't necessarily mean you were onto something. It just might mean you were onto something.
John, I'll tell you, I did really well with a bar stool once. I was half an hour in before I realized I was not talking to a woman.
You guys are terrific. I love it. Oh, that's great.
All right. Well, let's do this. We have to take a break in a moment. But before we do that, tell me one of the funniest, weirdest examples of experiences you've ever had.
Oh, I'll tell you one that comes to mind right off. I had a new client that I was reading for. And as soon as the reading started, I said, I'm feeling this huge, vast gulf, this distance, this separation, excuse me, between you and your son. And I don't think it's a physical distance, like he's moved across the country around the world. My feeling is he's deceased. He's on the other side. So is your son deceased? And he said, no. And I said, okay. I said, well, my feeling is, and your son's not dead. No, my son's not dead. I said, okay. So we kept going through the reading, and periodically I'd ask him, you know, hey, how am I hitting here? And he'd say, oh, man, you're right on the head. This is really great. This is really awesome. And I'm getting more and more puzzled, and his son keeps coming back to me. And I said, several more times during the reading, I said, look, I said, I hate to belabor this, and you tell me your son's still here, but your son's coming to me from the other side and telling me he's dead. And he's trying to come through, and he's trying to communicate. And the guy's, no, no. I'm like, okay, whatever. So we get to the end of the reading. It's time to wrap up and time for me to go on to my next client. And I said, well, you know, how did you feel about the reading overall? How was everything? He said, man, it was really great, but I wished you had talked to me more about my dead son. And I just didn't even know what to say at that point. I was wow. like, are you kidding me? Are you seriously now kidding me? And I was kind of speechless. I was at a loss for words. And like I say, I had to wrap up and get prepared for my next client and go on. So I couldn't like grill the guy, you know, and it's like, so that was one of the odd situations. And then real quick, before we go to break, I had another time I told this lady, I said, man, I said, I see a lot of disharmony in your home right now. And she said, no, 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 there's no disharmony in my home. She said, all the beds are made and the floors are swept and mopped and the dishes are clean. No disharmony here. But boy, my husband's been a bear lately. And so she related disharmony to the physical state of the house and not the spiritual or emotional state of the house. So, yeah, strange things.
Yeah. Wow. Funny. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We've got more to discuss. The book, A Knock in the Attic, True Ghost Stories and Other Spine-Chilling Paranormal Adventures. We'll hear some of those spine-chilling adventures when we return. The link for that book is in today's show information. So make sure you click it, order the book, and then make sure to rate and review it once you've had a chance to read it. We'll be back. You're listening to the best in paranormal podcasts. This is Darkness Radio. Welcome back to the program. This is Darkness Radio. I'm Dave Schrader. That's Tim Dennis. Remember, tonight, live Darkness Radio video stream. You'll be able to watch us on our social media pages or go subscribe right now to our YouTube channel. Give it a thumbs up, ring the bell, all the fun little things you need to do to subscribe and remind yourself about the new programs that pop up and the exclusive content that we'll be putting there as well. This weekend, while I'm at Mansfield Reformatory, I'll be posting some videos and some stuff, so make sure that you go check that out for yourself. And I'll be at Mansfield Reformatory all weekend. I arrive Friday. I go home on Monday. I would love for you to come on out and say hi to me. I'll be signing autographs, shaking hands, kissing babies. Well, from a distance, I'll blow kisses because, you know, COVID. But if you're interested, come on out. You can find information about it at darknessevents.com. That's darknessevents.com. We're talking with our guest, the book again, out and available right now, A Knock in the Attic. John Russell, our guest. John, let's start getting into some of the creepier stories. You know, as we come into the last half of the episodes, people always like the creepy stuff. So if they're listening before bed, this is what we put in their head. I know you said when you were a kid, you saw that gentleman appear in your room and disappear. That freaked you out, but you were never really afraid after that. But yet it's a book filled with spine chilling and paranormal adventures. So let's define some of those moments and share them with the audience.
Well, one of the things that I experienced when I was a kid, after that had happened then, we had this, what I call the drop marble noise. there would be a sound in the middle of the night when we were all asleep that would wake us up. And it was just like you took a big shooter marble and dropped it from ceiling height onto the wooden floor, and it would bounce loudly and then roll loudly. And that would happen sometimes once in the night, sometimes several times in the night. And there would be days or weeks go by, it wouldn't happen, and then sometimes it would happen several times in one night with successive nights occurring again and again. And we never could figure out what it was. It always happened at night, always happened in the dark, always happened when we were asleep. And it was a very disconcerting sound to hear. And we could never ascribe any real meaning to it. We didn't know if maybe it was a deceased relative, you know, trying to communicate, or if it was just some other, you know, spiritual activity of some type. There was never any real feeling of harm or malevolence or danger or anything like that associated with it. But it was just kind of an odd, kind of a one-off type thing. And it occurred for a while off and on, and then just vanished one day, and then just went away. So that was one of the kind of creepy, what I would describe as kind of creepy or spine-chilling experiences.
Do you see different types of beings? Like, do you see interdimensional? Yeah. Do you see alien? Do you see Bigfoot? What exactly do you experience? And on a level of malevolence, which ones creep you out the most?
Well, I can honestly, truthfully say that nothing has creeped me out. And I do see beings. I do see ghosts. I see spirits. I see nature spirits. I have seen a fairy, and wasn't real sure that I believed in fairies until I saw this one. I was sitting outside, and it was dark, and I was watching the stars and watching the UFOs do their thing. And from across the street, flying over our neighbor's house, right about it, just over the roof peak, about that height, and heading toward my house, was this glowing object coming across the street, not too fast, not too slow, but it was coming across the street at a good clip. And like I say, it was glowing, like it either had an aura around it or was lit up from within. And I was like, okay, this has got my attention. And as it got closer, I could see what it was, and it appeared to be female. It was a fairy. It had wings, a set of wings. It was about 2.5-3 feet long, I would guess, and had clothes, was fully clothed, had long hair, flowing hair, and definitely female features, definitely had wings, and flew on over the house, and I was like, hey, and it didn't come back, it didn't return, but I got to see that, and I was like, oh, so they are real. You know, people all the time talk about fairies and the little people and that type of thing, and so there you go. There was evidence for me. I saw that, and I was like, okay, I'm a convert now.
All right, well, once you've seen that and didn't have a faith or belief in that system before, what is that like, and how does that affect your paradigm? How does, you know, where do you fit that puzzle piece into the picture of your life?
Yes, what an excellent question. And that's what my main mission now is telling people, let's follow the truth wherever it leads us. And if it demolishes our pet peeves on the way, so much the better. It was just like when I was, around 20, I guess. I did not believe in UFOs. I had already had this plethora of paranormal and psychic experiences. I was reading professionally, doing all these things, and just didn't believe in UFOs. We subscribed to Fate magazine. We read all the articles. We read the books. We saw the people interviewed on TV, and I was like, nope, not buying it. For whatever reason, it just didn't click with me. And then I had my first experience, a daylight sighting up close and personal with witnesses. And when that happened, I was like, whoops, I got to change religion now, because there it is. So that's what I tell people. Let's try and find the truth. And if the truth demolishes our pet peeves and our theories and our dogma and our religion and whatever on the way, more power, you know, let's get to the truth. And so when those things happen, we have to integrate those into our lives in such a way that we go, okay, I've become aware of an additional aspect of the reality that we live in and an additional aspect of the paranormal realm or whatever. And so I have to integrate that. I have to acknowledge it as being true. And then that has to affect the way that I live and interact with things as a growth process.
When you talk to people that are having experiences with something that you necessarily hasn't been a part of your paradigm before,
right?
You know, obviously to a lot of us, it's easy to just kind of roll our eyes and dismiss or think there's a mental deficiency going on.
Correct.
how careful do you have to be in that? Or how do you have kind of a discernment gift that you can tell when somebody's maybe either making it up or has a very vivid imagination?
Right. And that is a problem, because like I tell people, look, we are incredibly inventive people, even when we think we're not, when we think we're not creative, or when we think we're very dull. If you and I and Tim want to sit down right now and develop a new language on the spot, we can do it. It's real easy. It's like, okay, flutopop, and that means a car. And you say, okay, well, flutopop extra, that means a car full of gas, we can take a trip. And then Tim comes up, but we've invented a new language, okay? So people are incredibly inventive and creative, and the problem is that our minds can invent and create things out of whole cloth, out of thin air. And that's one of the problems in investigating and dealing with things is, okay, is this person making up something? Are they lying? Did they see something and misinterpret it? And so I do have, for the most part, discernment when I'm dealing with people, when I'm listening to their experiences, as to, okay, where does this register on the BS meter or not? And so that's one thing that's beneficial and that's helpful. Now, there are some things, like I said, I've had well over 1,000 experiences. Some of the things I write about in my books are just nuts. They're just insane. They're just bizarre. They're over the top even for me. And so I can understand where somebody would look at that and go, nah, come on, this guy's off his rocker. And my experiences then have given me a little bit of latitude, a little bit of leeway in talking to people about their bizarre experiences, because I have to throttle back a little bit and say, okay, now, hey, you know, I've experienced some pretty weird stuff here, and a lot of it's we've caught on camera, we've caught on film, audio, whatever. There's physical evidence for it. So just maybe what they're experiencing, as far-fetched as it sounds, could be. So you have to have a little latitude there. You have to be willing to investigate. And I think it's good to be skeptical, but not a disbeliever. I mean, so many so-called skeptics go into things where their mind's made up, and it's like, nah, there's nothing to any of this. It's all explainable. It's all BS. You're all nuts. You're all misunderstanding what you're saying, and that's it, end of discussion. And it's like the Amazing Randy when he was alive. You know, Randy was the huge debunker that made his life's work there at the end to destroy Uri Geller. And I was on radio at the time with this friend of mine up in the north, and he, by some great good fortune, got the Amazing Randy as his guest. And I said, oh, man, I said, I'm not going to be able to call in or ask any questions, so ask Randy this. I said, I saw this special that Randy did on TV, and one of the psychics that Randy had told him, Randy gave him this object, and Randy said, there's no way that this guy could know anything about this object, who gave it to me, where it came from, or whatever. So the psychic began to describe where this object had come from, the friend that had presented it to Randy, and began to describe the guy's appearance. Now, here's where Randy calls things haywire, and this is how unfair this process is. Randy himself is admitting, up to this point, everything this guy is saying is correct, okay? But he said he hits this one part, and the guy says, I see this guy, and he's got something around his neck, like it's like a Nehru jacket or something like that. And so Randy said, no, that's wrong. Now, the thing was, what the psychic was seeing, and the best I remember, the guy wore turtlenecks or something like that. And the guy said, well, there's something like a collar or like a Nehru jacket up around his neck. Okay, that's close enough for me, right? But it wasn't for Randy. And in spite of Randy admitting that this guy had got all these other things right, on this one thing he misses, Randy calls the whole thing wrong and says, okay, the guy's wrong then. The whole thing's wrong. If one thing's wrong, the whole thing's wrong. So I told my buddy, the radio host, I said, listen, when Randy gets on there, ask him about that and say, how can you put that fine a point on things where you're saying up to this point, the guy's right, the guy's right, the guy's right, the guy's right. He gets a close description and says, no, I'm not going to accept that. That's wrong. So therefore, the whole thing's wrong. So the host asks him that, and Randy replies that, well, we've set this up in advance, and it's my call, and it's like I decide that if one thing's wrong, the whole thing's wrong, and so that's the way it went, and there you went. So that's not true skepticism. That's not an inquiring mind. That's just saying, hey, you've convinced me 4, 5, 6 times here, and now you say something that I don't quite agree with, so guess what? you're wrong. It's all wrong. And you can't do that. You can't. That's not true paranormal investigation. That's not even true skepticism. We have to have a healthy skepticism. Otherwise, we wind up in the juggle drinking poison Kool-Aid, right?
Sadly, so yeah.
A healthy skepticism is a good thing. But to go in with your mind made up that there's nothing to anything is just as bad as going in saying, oh, yeah, everything is valid or possible or reasonable or whatever. So you got to strike that middle balance, and you got to be willing to be honest enough and open enough to say, okay, well, let's find out. Let's investigate this. And one thing people have to learn, the paranormal does not favor science. Science hasn't gone anywhere close to catching up with the paranormal and being able to prove things or do things in a repeatable way. And the paranormal plays peekaboo with us anyways. You know, the other side plays peekaboo with us. You can't make an appointment with a UFO. I don't care what some people say.
Well, we'll find out more about that as they're releasing information here by mid-June, I think, on what the government
knows. They're supposed to, yeah.
All right. Now, I am curious about this. You touched on an aspect, right, about what people believe versus what's real.
Right.
We can lie to ourselves. We can believe things to a level. So if you're speaking to somebody who has a fractured personality,
right,
how do you discern that the voices they're hearing are not coming from spirit, but coming from their own fractured...
their own mind or a mental illness or whatever,
yes.
Yeah.
Or can they project that forward? Because I would think that... if you believe in something enough, you could look. We've talked about tulpas, thought forms, ghosts, and
right.
You know, the Philip experiment on this program. If they believe it and have willed it into existence, is it a real thing or is it a three-dimensional holographic projection of something they have created?
Right. I have had experience with people like that, and fortunately, my psychic gift ignores all the projections or whatever and gets down to how and what the person really is and what they're actually manifesting or perceiving or whatever. And I've had some clients that had mental illness or that had deceived themselves or had fractured personalities. And it was almost instantly recognizable. And what I would do for like the more severe cases is say, look, you got to either get back on your medicine, you got to go back to your doctor, you have to see a doctor, whatever, and steer them in that direction because they needed professional help. They needed literal physical medical help. And then other people that are just kind of deluded or, you know, whatever, you have to try and talk some sense into them. And oddly enough, some people want to continue to believe that, you know, no, this thing's going this way or that way or whatever. And it's like, okay. And you can talk to them till you're absolutely, you know, tuckered out, and they just won't accept it. They're going to keep believing in this nonsense. And that's one of the problems that we face in the spiritual realm is it's a lot easier. I tell everybody, and not too tongue-in-cheek, if I was a transvestite psychic in Gene Simmons high heels with several snakes wrapped around my neck, and I would go out and crow like a chicken first thing in the morning, I'd be front page news and making $1 million, you know, regardless of what stupid pronouncement I made. People would, have you heard this guy? Have you seen, boy, I got to follow this guy. I got to believe this guy. But you give people something practical and useful and helpful that will actually help their lives and help them advance in their lives, but may not be entertaining or what they wanted to hear. You know, I don't want that, you know, but, oh, here's this guy with the snakes around his neck. Let's go see what he has to say. And I remember one time I had come by private invitation to Dallas, Texas. And I was there for a private group reading and some other things that I did, all by invitation and all private and all by invitation only. And the costume designer for Walker, Texas Ranger was one of the people that came and got a reading with me. And I'm not revealing anything I'm not supposed to here. She gave me permission to talk about it a long time ago. This has been decades ago now. And she told me when she finished the reading, she said, yeah, me and my girlfriend's in the office, she said, every lunch break is like, okay, who are we going to go see today? Oh, here's another psychic. Oh, here's a new psychic. Oh, who are we going to go talk to today? Who are we going to go see today? And it was like entertainment. You know, it was just like something they did. They weren't going to get any real helpful, positive information for their lives that they could take home and apply and make their lives better. It was just like, oh, here's a new one in the Yellow Pages. Let's go see this one. And that's what they did.
With that, you get those serial people that are, they need that conversation. They need that connection with the other side constantly. Do you ever get somebody and you're like, yes, John, I really need to make a connection. And you start to tap in and, you know, grandpa comes through and he's like, what, again? Stop bothering me. I'm trying to play Canasta with Jimi Hendrix and you keep
calling. There you go.
Do you ever get ghosts that are pissed off? They're just like, enough's enough. Stop it.
You know, I've had spirits that just absolutely refuse to come through for people because it's like, you know, enough, you know, you can figure this out on your own. And usually I don't let it get to that point. There are people that I've refused to read for. There are people that have paid for readings. I've refunded their money, called them up, said, you don't need a reading. You need this bit of advice. Now go take it and go on. And there are other people I've just absolutely refused to read for, and not in a mean way, but just say, hey, you don't need a reading. You need to do this or do that or understand this or understand that, and that's all you need right now. You don't need a reading. That's all you need. So I try and short-circuit that. I try and put an end to it before it starts, and I tell my – I won't let my clients become reliant on me. I will not. I'll tell people, I'll say, look, people say, well, when should I call you again? I said, 4, 5, 6 months down the road, you know, let things happen, let things develop. You know, and obviously if something happens, it's been 2 or 3 weeks since we've spoken and something comes up that I haven't foreseen, that you haven't foreseen, it's an emergency situation in your mind, you say, oh man, I need to get John's input. I've got to call him, talk to him about this. Fine. That's okay. But otherwise, let things develop. Live your life. Put into practice what we've talked about. Let things grow. Let things develop. You know, 4, 5, 6 months down the road, you feel like you need to holler at me again. Great. And some clients have called me virtually weekly or monthly for a number of years because they have these incredibly complex lives, these incredibly complex businesses, these incredibly complex transactions and things going on. And it takes that repeated input because it's just a constant change, a constant upheaval, a constant here's this, here's that, this is new, that's new. Since we talked last, this has developed. Now what do I do? And so for those people that have the wherewithal and need that, I do that. And even them, I encourage, say, okay, let's back off a little bit. Let's let this slow down and a few things take effect, and then we'll get back into it when we need to. So you kind of have to parcel it out as needed. And a lot of people, like I say, a lot of people just do it for entertainment. That's an abuse and a waste. They don't need it. And there's a lot of people that seek readings more frequently than they need. You know, if you find a good psychic, they're accurate for you, they're helpful for you, their insights are good, their predictions come true, take that and work with it, develop that in your life, make that progress. Then when you've gone as far as you feel like you can go, then get back with them again, see what the latest input is or whatever. But that's the way you need to handle that.
By calling forth the same spirits constantly, seeking their guidance, seeking help or insight, does that impede the loved one from fully evolving and being able to go forward with their next evolution?
No, because they can just ignore us. They can just say, huh, not coming through. And I've had spirits do that during sessions, and it's like, nope, not talking.
Tim? Like, you and I are going to get screened on the other side as well, Tim.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So that does happen, and I've had I had one real interesting incident happen with a client that was just really obsessed with hearing about their dead grandparents, whom they dearly, dearly loved. And this was a regular client for a number of years. And I would get all kinds of wonderful, accurate, fantastic things for this person, evidential things, really accurate things, and could never hear a peep from the grandparents. And so one day I said, oh, stop. I just stopped him in the middle of the reading. I said, listen, I think I'm getting your grandparents. And I gave them a physical description, and they said, oh, my God, that's them. That's them. That's exactly what they look like. What do they say? What have they got? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. They gave me their physical description, let me know they were there, and then they vanished again without any message at all. Well, this person couldn't figure it out. I couldn't figure it out. And so what had happened in this person's life as time progressed was that there was a family member that they learned they couldn't trust, that was not trustworthy. And In the meantime, then, the next reading, the grandparents came through and I said, oh, they're here, they're back again. Well, what do they say? And the grandparents started with that there's this relative that you can't trust. Well, my client had found that out right before this reading, and so the grandparents had waited until the opportune time to come through with something meaningful that this person needed and would give them, you know, unmatched validity, that it was really them coming through and that they saw this family circumstance and situation where this individual was indeed misleading and unreliable and untruthful and so on and so forth. Now, if they had came through months earlier or years earlier and delivered that message, this person wouldn't have been able to receive it, would have said I was nuts, off my rocker, inaccurate, whatever. But then by them waiting and kind of priming the pump by coming through that one time and then coming through with that message when the person had experienced it and could validate it, it was even more meaningful to them. So a lot of times people on the other side see things further down the road than we do, and they bide their time in coming through for, you know, situations, reasons perhaps, just like that one. And then after that important message was delivered, after that they would come through periodically and say, hey, remind them I used to cook them this, and this was their favorite dish, and so on and so forth. So, you know, a lot of times there's important things that people see on the other side, and they say, you know, this is what I really need to get through, but the time has to be right to do it. So that's why I tell people, you know, don't bug them, you know, don't ask for this and that and the other. What tie should I wear this morning? Well, you know, if you got to ask the spirits what tie to wear, you're in bad shape. So people on the other side are busy living their lives, doing things, moving on, you know, learning and so on and so forth. So we have to take that into account.
I want to, we've got so much of your story to tell, but we teased it in the opening, talking about when you lost faith. And that's been, you know, that's been a strange ride for me on this journey, oh, especially over the last 15 years of doing the show. There are times my faith in God, humanity, the other side start to wane. And
Exactly.
I'm just curious what your journey has been like.
Well, you know, I had all of these phenomenal, wonderful experiences. I saw my predictions coming through in people's lives, coming true. And I saw my insights be accurate for them. And I've always been a pretty brave individual and pretty adventurous and pretty active, had a wild sense of humor and looked at life with a grain of salt and was always pretty boisterous and outgoing and kind of laissez-faire about things, kind of cavalier about things. And I was young. And, you know, I'm going to live forever. Everybody young thinks they're going to live forever. And I had all these marvelous gifts and saw all these marvelous things happening. And then as I grew and matured and developed, and as my gifts grew and matured and developed, I began to see the dark side of the world and the tragedies and the hurt and the death and the suffering and the upsets and the sorrows and the things that we did not have answers for, in spite of proclaiming the fact that we did. And that began to impact me, and that began to awaken me, and that began to open my eyes. So I began to learn that. And then as I matured, I studied the Christian religion more deeply, actually became an ordained minister, and was actually an associate pastor of a small church for a very short period of time, and ministered to the sick and dying. I remember holding a woman's hand as she died and crossed over, felt her spirit leave the body, felt her presence leave the room, felt the presence of beings, angels, whatever come and envelop that room to let us know that they had taken her, she had transitioned. And that was an awe-inspiring experience. My eyes began to be open to these deeper and deeper things, the more harsh realities of the world that we do live in. And it got to the point in all my ministering and counseling and exercising all of my gifts and everything that I had done that I came to realize that person X can do the exact same thing that you've envisioned or seen or recommended or whatever, and they're miraculously, verifiably, truly healed. Person Y can do the exact same thing in the exact same way, and they die. And I got to seeing all of these people that it was kind of a hit and miss thing. Like it was kind of like, okay, you won the lottery and you don't. And that's the way it came across to me, the way that God or the great creator, this eternal power on the other side, all these spirits and beings and angels and things, whatever, all of our religious practices, all of our beliefs and hopes and prayers and faith, sometimes it worked, sometimes it didn't, and you never could figure out what that key was. I saw people that believed more strongly than I've ever believed in my life, and they failed miserably or died or got sick or whatever. And I've seen other people that were kind of laissez-faire about the whole thing, and boom, and they prospered, they got healed. And so I finally reached the point, I was like, you know, I'm tired. I was in my 30s, and I had done this my entire life, and I had practiced all these things and studied all these things and done all this work and got down in the bloody trenches with all of this stuff where the reality is. And it was like, you know, guys, if this is the best there is, if it's like sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, this person dies, this one lives, I'm tired of it. If I don't get some answers, if I don't get some help, if I don't get something to enable me to deal with this better and to help other people more, I'm done. And I write in the book, I went out at night, it was close to Christmas time, I believe, and it was at night, and I went out on a deserted highway in my car, and I got out and I looked up the expanse of the sky there in West Texas, and it was inky black, and the stars were all out, and it was just gorgeous to look at. And I got out and I cursed God and I shook my fist at the sky and I said, give me some answers. And there was none. And I said, yeah, I thought so. And I got back in my car and I drove home. I went to sleep. And so I did my best from that point onward just to turn my back on it all and to get away from everything. And just not to deal with it, because I was so disappointed with it and so frustrated with it. And then one night I was lying in bed asleep, and I popped suddenly wide awake. And where I was at, I had those old roller shades, you know, in my bedroom down over the windows. And people had outside lights on. There were street lights on, everything. So they allowed enough light to come in that you could kind of, once your eyes were accustomed to the darkness, you could kind of see in the room there. So I woke up wide awake, like again when I was a small boy, and I looked around the room and I immediately felt that there was a presence there. And so I had years and years and years of martial art training, so I was going to roll over and attack this person, whoever it was that had invaded my bedroom. And as I tried to move, I was like, I readied myself to roll over and launch my attack, and I couldn't move. Now I could breathe. My eyes would move. I could look around the room, but otherwise I was totally, completely paralyzed. I couldn't move a limb. And I was like, okay. And then it dawned on me, this is supernatural. This is paranormal. And I sat there a little bit longer, and then I discovered I could speak, and I whispered. I said, who are you? And this hand reached over and grabbed me on the shoulder and gave me this gentle, loving squeeze, this most... I almost tear up when I talk about it. It was the most compassionate squeeze, this gentle squeeze, and held on to me for a little bit, and then let me go. And when they let go, I wasn't paralyzed. I jumped up, looked around the room, turned on the lights, and of course nobody in a physical body was there. And that was kind of like the other side coming and like, we hear you. We understand. We can't give it all to you, but we can give some of it to you. You know, come on back. You know. And I did, and so then I learned that you walk in what light that you have, and you hope you get more.
That's pretty deep. I mean, especially to have had to face that kind of realization of, I just don't know where I can do this anymore. I don't know if I can do this anymore. And right. That's got to be strange, because a lot of people are thinking, my God, I don't have these gifts you've got. And you can do and see and say and connect in ways that none of us can. Right. And still you have questions. Do you think that's part of what keeps us sane, is that we do have questions, that we do keep putting forth concern and wanting, sometimes demanding more? Is that human nature? Is that normal for us?
I think it is. I think it's absolutely normal for us. And, I'm not alone in that. I remember one time I became aware of a statement among true spiritual workers. And what I mean by true spiritual workers is not the person that parrots some teaching and collects their salary or their offering or the this or that or whatever and goes on about their business, but among people that have really tried to take and apply what they know and get down in the trenches with people that are suffering and hurting and going through loss and sickness and illness, disease and pain and addiction and all these other things. Nearly every person I know of that has actually done that has lost their faith at one time or the other, because it is such a horrific thing that you go through. You know, you look, you say, oh, John Russell psychic, oh, all these experiences, look, he's got books out, he's on these shows and this, that, and the other. And they don't know the clients that I've had that have committed suicide in horrible ways and that I couldn't save or couldn't keep them from doing that. They don't know the questions that I've had for occurrences that have happened, such as this one client that I had, that for all these things that the other side can tell me so accurately, this one client I'd had for a number of years, she had called me and we were having this reading, and for some reason the other side impressed upon me to tell her over and over and over, again and again and again, find the things that you really love and do them repeatedly this month. Do them a lot. Do them over and over again. I went out to eat last night. Go out to eat again tonight. I like doing this. Do it again. Do it two or three, four times this week. Do it again next week. Do it over and over and over. And they told me to tell her that repeatedly. So I did. And the reason for that was she died that month. Now, they didn't tell me she was going to die. They just told me to tell her to do that. And I found out she had died from her parents, who were going through things, found my number, called me up, and I told them that I was her spiritual advisor, her counselor, her psychic. And they told me that she had died. They told me how she had died and what had happened. And so, you know, you say, man, guys, you know, you could have told me to prepare her, but instead they prepared her by saying, you know, do this, enjoy this. They knew she was going to pass over. They knew she was going to transition. And yet there have been times that they have told me directly. And this depends upon the client and upon what they can handle and what they can take. And they've told me sometimes, tell them directly, hey, tell them their dad's fixing to die. You know, they need to spend some time with him. And I've done that. But to have that occur and to say, you know, why couldn't you have told me or prepared her? But that was the way they prepared her. That's the way they chose to do it. And so we have to deal with that. You know, I look at it and say, well, I wouldn't have done it that way. But they did, and I was the conduit for that. And so you have to learn to accept those things. And it's difficult. It's hard. If we have a little time here and you want to launch into it, I'll talk about one of the incidences in the book where this young girl was prophesied to be healed. And I discovered that, no, that wasn't the case. And it was one of the things I talked about early in my life that awakened me to some of the realities of this and began to raise these questions
that, I do want to talk about that, but just to kind of wrap it up, here you are, you're kind of doing God's work in a sense, right? You're the mouthpiece. You're bringing peace and love and compassion and understanding to people that are in need. You stumble. You are human and fallible and question.
Absolutely.
Did you ever feel like during that point you might have been under attack from darker forces because there was a chink in the armor and they...
I understand what you're saying, but I don't really think so. I think it was just coming up against the reality of the difficulties of living in this world.
Right. I know that aspect. Yeah. I'm not saying that they were the ones that caused it, but I would think that once they see an opportunity and somebody shaking in their faith, that would be the time for something dark or malevolent to try to make its move on you.
Well, I don't think it did, because I have had these wonderful, literal guardian angels that have been with me since I was a child and on through my adulthood, that have quite literally saved my life many times, and they have protected me from all these types of things. So I think any evil that was there waiting to pounce said, oh, we got him now, you know, let's take him out. I am absolutely convinced that I call them my guys as an affectionate umbrella term for everybody on the other side that's been with me my whole life and protected me and guided me and everything. And I think my guys were there to keep me safe through that process and to see me through those dark waters and out the other side. And I think that's why nothing was allowed to further that or to deepen that or to attack me in that manner.
Have you ever seen a demon?
I have seen, not the Hollywood exorcism version and not behind every bush, and only once that I could really honestly say that I thought I saw a malevolent or demonic type presence, and that was in an animal possession that I am convinced was literally an animal possession. This animal had eye shine when there was no light to produce eye shine, that type of thing. And there were several other weird bits of phenomena that went on with this creature. And I firmly believe that there was some evil entity in that. Now, that's once in, I'm 67 years old now, so once in 67 years I've seen that. Not to deny that there's evil in the world, obviously there is, and by extrapolation there has to be evil in the spiritual realm as well. But I think people over-manifest that, over-believe in that, over-dramatize that, and I don't believe there's a demon behind every bush. I don't believe that we're just constantly under this assault from these beings. Obviously there is a negative spiritual presence out there, but if there is, then by extrapolation we also have to have, you know, the guardian angels, the good spiritual presences out there. Is there a spiritual battle between good and evil? Absolutely, I believe there is. But I believe that we have to look for that light. We have to align ourselves with that goodness, with that presence, ask for its protection, listen to that guidance, count on that protection, and then launch that counterattack against the darkness.
All right, good to know. Yeah, I'm of the same mind that there's not a demon in every cupboard either. And right. Sometimes it's just fear of the unknown.
Absolutely.
That interpretation, you know, I have to laugh, and I don't know if Tim was picking up on it, but when you started telling that story at the beginning about the plate that broke and this woman right. felt like she was under attack, we had a very similar story along these lines years ago where this woman contacted me and said, I think I have a demon. And when I asked how, she said, because her grandmother's favorite plate fell off the wall. And I said, okay, did it make like a 666? No. Did it make a pentagram? No. Did the pieces fly off the ground and try to impale you? No. I said, then why do you feel that it was a demon? Exactly. And she said, yeah, her answer was because it broke my grandma's favorite plate. And I'm like, that is like the devil's idiot nephew. That's the only job he gives him that day, right? Just break great grandma's plate.
You go out there and break these plates now. That's a good job for you. That'll destroy people's faith for sure.
Yeah, exactly.
I hear exactly what you're saying. I agree 100%.
Oh, crazy stuff. All right. Well, now talk to me about this other case where you were talking about a woman prophesizing about her healing. Let's go with that tale.
Oh, my. Yeah, this is in the book. The first time I've written about it, and I hadn't talked about it very much. This occurred when I was young. Like I said, I was very cavalier. And I had developed already by the time of I was 18, people were driving 200 miles one way to get a reading with me. I developed a little bit of a reputation already. And so there was this girl in town, and she had this brain tumor, and it was diagnosed as terminal. And she had been to MD Anderson in Houston, been treated there several times. And the funny thing about this, now I knew people both in the regular church community, the organized religion, the typical Christian community, and then I knew people in the paranormal, the spiritual, the occult community as well. So I got both sides of the fence there, both sides of the coin. And the funny thing is that people in the church, charismatic churches, mainline denominational churches, everything, everybody in town had received a word from God or a prophecy or a word of wisdom or knowledge or a vision or whatever, God was going to heal this girl. And it was going to cause such a revival that you know, the town would be revived, the state of Texas might be revived, it might spread across the nation. Now, every church in town was in agreement, saying the same things, and all these people were receiving these visions and these prophecies and everything. Now, coincidentally and ironically, in the paranormal community, people were receiving spiritually these communications and the same visions and the same things and saying the same things, receiving the same message. So the entire town was, bound together in this belief that these messages were coming, that this girl was going to be saved, healed, delivered, all this stuff that was going to bring revival, that she was going to be healed of this brain tumor. So her mother called my mother, and she said, I understand that your son has some insights and has some really deep connection with spirit and really receives things. Would he come and would he pray with us and see if God tells him anything or whatever? And so my mother asked me, I said, oh, absolutely. And so I went over there, and I remember it was this bright, sunny afternoon, blue skies, not a cloud in the sky, sunshine, beautiful day. And I parked the car and went up to the door. And I mentioned that. It's really important. It's integral to the story. I parked the car and went up to the door and knocked. And the woman opened the door. The mother opened the door. And the house is pitch black inside, even during this bright, beautiful, sunny day. And the reason is that the girl's tumor hurts so much and it impinges her optic nerve so much that the light hurt her eyes and made her head hurt worse. So they had heavy blankets hung over all the windows and things like that. So the house was basically almost pitch black inside. So I walked in, she introduced me to the daughters and introduced me to the girl. And the second, David, that I laid eyes on her, this voice in my head loudly and clearly said, almost audibly outside of me, it was so clear, "She's mine. She will be with me within 2 weeks' time." And that's it. And I was like, holy cow. And I knew that I had heard the voice of truth in spite of all of these prophecies, all of these prayers, all of these visions, all of this stuff from the church, all of this stuff from the paranormal community. I knew beyond a shadow of a doubt I'd heard the voice of truth. And so I went in and I prayed with the girl. And even as I was talking with them and everything, they were getting ready to run back to MD Anderson because she was in the throes of this horrible agony. So I went to take my leave, and the mother walked me to the door, and she looked at me, and she said, "Did God tell you anything? Is there any hope? Is there any help? Is there anything you can give us?" And like I say, I was young, naive, cavalier, knew I was going to live forever, and was just kind of taking a lot of this stuff for granted. And I looked at her, and I gave her this cliche answer, which was, you know, "Well, we have to trust in God's wisdom. His ways are higher than ours," and blah, 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 which was totally useless, totally stupid. I write in the book, I said I might as well open the door and throw in a handful of rattlesnakes. That would have been as much help. And she kind of just hung her head down, looked at the floor, and said, "Okay," and closed the door slowly. And here I turn around from that darkness back into this beautiful, bright, sunshiny day. And I think, man, you know, we're driving down the street. We're happy. We got the radio blaring. We're in the sunshine. We don't know what's going on behind the doors of all those houses we pass. So that was the first lesson I learned. The second thing was within 2 weeks, the girl was dead. And now I had heard the voice of truth, and it went counter to all of this multitude of things saying the opposite. But I had heard that voice of truth. Now, was that the voice of God? Was that the voice of some superior spirit being or angel or whatever? I don't know. I've tried to figure it out, and to this day, I don't know. But the voice, whatever it was, spoke the truth. It wasn't malevolent. It wasn't angry. It wasn't challenging. It wasn't threatening. It was a pleasant male voice, and it just stated matter-of-factly, "She's mine. She'll be with me within 2 weeks' time." And she was. And that was the beginning of shaking my faith to the core and making me begin to question things and realize that we don't have a handle on this, and that there are powers and forces far greater than us to deal with. And so, you know, I attempted to find out who and what that voice was, and I never have gotten an answer, and I don't guess I ever will get an answer, maybe someday on the other side. But there it was, and there was the truth, and I was like, oh, wow. You know, that puts a whole different spin on things then.
Do you feel compelled? Like, if you and I were, you know, you, Tim, and I are talking, if all of a sudden, you know, a message comes through for one of us that says, you know, "Enjoy this interview, John. One of these boys is gone soon." Are right. you, do you feel compelled to tell somebody? Or do
if,
you just
if the other it, side leads me to,
if well, isn't that leading?
Tells me to do that. I'm sorry.
Isn't that leading by telling you, one of these guys, they're checking out soon?
Sometimes they will tell me to do that, and sometimes they will tell me not, for whatever reason. And I don't understand the mechanism for that. Like I say, the people on the other side know things better than we do, see farther down the road than we do, have different reasons, motivations than we do. And if I'm to say it, I say it. If I'm told to be quiet, I stay quiet. I don't go against the guys on the other side. Because
how hard is that?
Trust them. Very. Extremely hard, extremely hard. And there are times that I have been given like flashes of information or bits of things for people. And I'm like, oh man, I need to tell them this. And the guys are like, Nope. You're just picking up and seeing what's there, what's going to happen, what's going to be, but it's not yours to tell them about it right now. You stay quiet. And so I'm like, okay, whatever.
Then why tell you? Doesn't that seem kind of cruel of the fates or whatever?
No, because of the way the gift works, it's just I'm plugged into this all the time, and I'm always getting bits and pieces of things. And so it's you know, and here it comes, and I'm like, oh, I should do something with that. And they're like, no. So, you know, my natural tendency is on my own to get a piece of information and to run with it, and sometimes that's not the right thing to do. So I have to defer to a higher knowledge there, and that was a painful lesson to learn.
I see. That would be the stuff that would really shake my faith, to be like, why give me this information but not allow me to share
it? Yeah. And over the years, I've just had to come to peace with that. I've just had to say, okay, that's one of the things that, all right, you know. And it's like I tell my clients, you know, all the beings, entities, things on the other side, they see further down the road than we do. They have different priorities than we do. They have different priorities for our lives than we do. And I tell my clients, I'll say, look, give me your questions because I want to get to your hot buttons. But if we're just relying solely on the other side, you may be like, is my boyfriend going to come back to me? And the other side couldn't care less about that. They're saying, hey, you need to go back to college and get this degree. And that's all they want to get across to you. That's it. They couldn't care less about anything else. So I tell them, I say, I'm going to give you what the other side gives me. And then you put your questions in too. Make sure we cover those, because the other side doesn't always see as a priority what we do see as a priority. It's a strange thing to work with. It's a difficult thing to work with. And like I say, there's, you know, over the years, I've done this professionally now for 50 years next year. And my clients over that period of time, and there's always disgruntled clients, there always will be for anybody. But the majority of my clients, and when I say majority, I mean the vast majority, have given me an accuracy rating of 80 to 90% over those years. And those include clients that have been with me for years and years, maybe even decades. And that sounds terrific. Until you realize, let's take the low number, 80% accurate. That's pretty impressive, ain't it? Until you realize that for every 8 out of 10 issues, 2 of those issues fall through the cracks. And those could be real big issues that fall through the cracks. You know, we're not God. We have a gift, but we're not God. And we don't get to see it all, and we don't get to know it all, and we don't get to be that 100% accurate. So it's a challenge. It's a difficulty. And that's one of the things I've prided myself on during my psychic career, is say, look, you know, if I give this to you and tell you to take it to the bank, you can take it to the bank. If I give it to you and say, well, you know, 70-30 here, that's the way it comes to me, and that's how I have to give it to you, and that's all I can do. So I've never cheated my clients by saying, oh, you know, yeah, I'm going to answer everything for you. That doesn't exist. That doesn't happen. It's just not there. If it works 100% of the time, it's a fake and a fraud and a phony, I can guarantee you. Because the real psychic gift doesn't work that way.
You know, here's an interesting thing I'd like your take on. I'm trying to figure out how to pose the question without leading the witness, Your Honor. have you ever looked to spirit for the future only to have it blocked out to you? And is there anything like a year or a time that ever occurred to you?
I think there are times that I have tried to foresee things for myself or for world conditions that weren't made completely clear for whatever reasons. For my clients, I have been able to be accurate for them in the future without that being blocked out. As a matter of fact, most times the other side will give me more information or further down the road than what I actually need or what I believe my clients may need. And so I give that to them. I've never had a situation where I couldn't read for a client. I've had plenty of situations where people told me, well, you didn't tell me what I want to hear. You know, well, I'm not going to do that. But I haven't had things blocked from me in that way. Now, interestingly enough, sometimes people on the other side will block communication with me, not for my client, not for what I'm getting through to them, but an example of this happened just the other day. I was reading for this client. I was getting these relatives that were coming through, and man, I was going after these relatives. I was like, I got to probe these people. I got to find out more here. What's going on? Give me the info. And they absolutely just literally shut me down. They were like, nope, we're not communicating any more to this client through you. This client needs to now begin to rely on us and come to us and ask us directly, and we'll do that. But nope, no more for you. And I said, ah, doggone it. So that was kind of frustrating. But again, you know, you go with where the gift takes you. You go with where the truth takes you. And you take what they give you, and you work with that. You deal with that.
The only reason I ask is, you know, I thought this was strange, but, you know, you go with it at times. And, you know, Tim and I are skeptical believers. We've had experiences. We question things. But I had at least three of who I would consider big mediums that we've grown to love and become friends with over the years.
Right.
They told me a few years ago that something big was coming, and they didn't know if it meant the end of it all or what, but that they could not see into 2020. They could not see anything. It was as if it was erased. And I thought, well, that's weird. All right. Well, let's see what happens. And then lo and behold, well,
obviously we're still here. Yeah.
Yeah. The world, the world is here, but the world came to a standstill to a degree, you know, I mean, with COVID,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, they give a lot of credit to the Simpsons for seeing the future. You know, I know the show, Last Man on Earth.
Episodes, yeah.
Yeah. The Last Man on Earth couldn't have gotten much better. What, that show came out in 2017 and it takes place in 2020 when a virus wipes out most of the planet.
Right.
That's crazy. Yeah. But that I had no less than three mediums I know and trust independently come to me and tell me something's really weird here. I don't see anything in 2020. I have a veil down where I'm not allowed to go there or any further. And since I've asked, and they've seen things since, but it was just, that's very strange that it was kept from them.
I didn't have a veil come down over that. I could see that there was going to be, you know, difficulties, problems, situations happen. But one of the things that I saw about this is that a lot of it is nonsense.
We're here at the end of the program, and I'm just curious, with the gifts that you have, for people that are interested in developing these gifts for themselves, what is the simplest and best piece of advice you would have for them? And is it something that everybody should strive for? Would that bring the world closer, or...
I think it's something we all should strive for. We need all the light that we can get. We need to unite together and exercise this power for the benefit of good and light against darkness and evil. Literally, we need to do that. And one of the good ways, I'm glad you mentioned that, because my third book, which I'm working on, is titled 20 Ways to Increase Your Psychic Abilities. Hopefully that'll be out early next year. And what it is a compendium of techniques. I take one technique per chapter. For example, the first chapter is psychometry. What it is, how it's defined, how to learn it, how to use it. Once you've learned that, the real world application for that, so that it's not just a parlor trick. It's something you can actually integrate into your life, take into the real world, make use out of, that helps you advance, protects you, helps you grow, helps you understand, and so on and so forth. So that's coming. Be on the lookout for that. The other thing is, right now, people can just go directly to the other side. You don't need a priest. You don't need a psychic. You don't need a preacher. You don't need a rabbi. You don't need a spiritual leader. You don't need a guru. You can just go to the other side and just get out there in nature, sit down, be quiet, turn off your cell phone, take the earbuds out, you know, sit in silence and look at nature, look at the sky, look at the trees, tune in, say, okay, I know there are spirits here. I know there are guides here. I know there are beings here. Lead me. Talk to me. What should I learn? How do I learn it? Where should I go? What should I do? And then pay attention to that when it comes. It doesn't do any good to ask for guidance if we don't shut up and listen so we can receive it. And then it doesn't do any good once we've received it if we don't act on it, if we don't you know, put it into action. And it may be something real simple and easy. It may be something complex. You may ask for something for days on end and not hear anything, and then boom, all of a sudden there it comes. You may ask for something in the first day. You may get something. So it depends upon your individual walk with the realm of spirit and what you need in your life and where you're at. We all have different needs at different times. We all have life lessons to learn. There's no shortcuts. We have to go through these things. And going back to an earlier question, an earlier issue we discussed, you know, why is it so hard for some of these communications sometimes? I believe that there are fail safes in place between us and the realm of spirit as well. Because if you could learn how to make an effective curse work every single time you wanted it to, the next time somebody cuts you off in traffic, boom, there you go and you kill them. And, you know, I don't think the universe is going to allow us to run around with that kind of leeway and to do this stuff willy-nilly. So I think there are some checks and balances in place that we have to observe. But that's the easiest way to start. Go directly to the source and ask, and then listen, and then act.
I like it. John Russell, A Knock in the Attic, True Ghost Stories and Other Spine-Chilling Paranormal Adventures. The book is out and available. Link on today's program guide. Watch tonight our Darkness Radio Live Holzer's Ghosts program on our social media and our Darkness Radio YouTube page. For that guy, I'm this guy. You've been listening to that show. This is Darkness Radio.